Hello, everyone. This is Alex Barthet with the Lean Zone. Let's try that again. Hello, everybody. This is Alex Barthet with the Lean Zone podcast. Today, we're going to talk with James Terry of Green Team and how to embrace the suck. You know, growing a business is hard. And what are some of the ways that we can make it easier? James, how are you doing today?
Good, Alex. How are you?
Good. So tell us a little bit about yourself, about the business, how you started it.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. So started Green Team in 2009 as just a plumbing service company doing side jobs. Was let go of my position as a plumber working for a family-owned business during the recession in 2009. And at that time, just decided to go out on my own because I really didn't have any other options like a lot of people. And during that time with no opportunity for jobs, it kind of pushed me over the cliff. Like it was that person behind the cliff going, "You'll be fine, bro. Just jump off." And so that propelled me into starting the business just as a plumbing company. It evolved over time. We reacted to different clients' requests and turned it into something.
James, when you say like you just started, like it was like you in a truck.
That's it. Yeah. I had been doing side jobs forever. Like talk to any plumber, right? You install a faucet at someone's house, you fix someone's toilet, right? You start as a kind of like a handyman, right? You're just doing small odd jobs here and there. And, you know, kind of what you can see in the market of the blue collar trades is that if you show up, if you do a good job, if you're cordial, if you're professional, like people are going to call you back, right? They're going to refer you to their friends. And so that kind of blossomed into me seeing an opportunity. And really what happened one day was I was coming over the 595 passover, the flyover over 95, and I looked at all the buildings in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and I just kind of said to myself, I bet that market is just as underserved as all these people that are calling me right now for residential service. And that's where my entire mindset shifted to large scale, institutional, industrial, class A office, retail, just I wanted to go after the buildings that valued professional services and that didn't look at the trades as just another commodity. They looked at it as someone that can bring value to their organization. And that brought me a lot of pride because I think ultimately in the construction business, like we all just want to be respected, right, for what we do. We just want people to value us. And looking at that industry, it just felt like there was more value there.
So how did you go from you and your truck to kind of the next phase where you have a helper and a second plumber and someone in the office? Like to me, that's kind of the biggest step because adding the fourth plumber, the fifth plumber, the 47th plumber, that's relatively incremental versus kind of that beginning. How did that go?
Yeah. So I would say one vertical market at a time. And so the first person that I met was a gentleman who had a large mechanical business. And, you know, just as kind of, you know, advice to anybody, don't be afraid to look around. You know, if you look at someone like Steve Jobs, what's the first thing Steve Jobs at 12 years old did? He called the guy at Hewlett Packard and said, "Can I borrow some parts? I'm building something," right? Like how much, you know, he had a lot of, I would say, resourcefulness, right? Like look around you. There's plenty of successful people in this world. And what a lot of people, I think, don't realize is that the most successful people in this world typically will always want to help someone younger than them because they see themselves as that younger person. So I went out, I reached out to somebody. I said, "Listen, I'm looking for some help. I need some advice. I need someone to help me with permitting. I need a license. I need, you know, there's some things I needed to figure out in order to build my business." And he happened to be a very large mechanical contractor in the healthcare industry. And so healthcare was our first vertical. I mean, almost overnight, I made a deal with a gentleman named Pat Kearney. And a day later, I was getting service calls at Broward Health. So that's where that started, right? Because what you really need is volume, right? You need volume. You can't just be tinkering around in the truck waiting on a service call. And so that's what gave me the volume in order to start the hiring process and start bringing on more people. So I would say I built it to about three trucks, myself included, all hand-me-downs. You know, I was borrowing old trucks from people. I was just scrounging at anything I could get. And right around that three truck point is really when you have to get out, right? That's when it's time to say, okay. And you know, for any business, a single person, in my opinion, in a contracting business cannot manage more than 7 to 8 people, right? And so the minute you start to get to that 5, 6 people, that's when you have to start thinking about, okay, I need to hire at least someone in the office. So I brought my mom in the office to answer the phones. I was still estimating. I was still project managing, but I had 3 plumbers and trucks running around doing the jobs that I had sold and so on and so forth. So, you know, really over time, it's just an incremental change. And a lot of the decisions are intuition based, right? You know, when it feels like it's chaotic, right? When the clients are calling and there's just not enough time in the day. And Pat had always gave me that one great piece of advice, which was, until there isn't one extra hour in the day, that's when you hire people, right? Like, a lot of people think, well, I'm just going to hire people. No, you still have to put the work in. You still have to have the 18-hour days. But the minute you feel things are overwhelming at that point, after you're grinding that much, now you hire another person. You put them into the fold. And really, from healthcare, right, we went into Class A office. And so that another vertical market. So these markets
So you left residential pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was still doing it. I was working for some HOAs and some condos. But predominantly what I really knew was that I wanted to go after the bigger clients. I wanted clients that were going to help me drive revenue in a different way. And really, I was going after the stuff that I wanted to do, the work that no one else could do. Right, because that would put me in a place where I was under high demand and there wasn't as much competition. If you go on the phone, you know, go anywhere, there's a gazillion residential plumbers in South Florida. I needed a way, or I wanted a way, to differentiate myself so that I could take my business to the next level. And so from vertical to vertical, healthcare was number one. So that was, you know, started to get clients, started to build rapport, started to build a reputation. And I think what a lot of people need to realize is that each vertical market, it's although it's a big world, just like you as an attorney, it's a small world, right? You mm-hmm. probably know all the predominant attorneys in your space.
Correct.
You know all the, so in each resident, or I'm sorry, in each vertical market, right? Healthcare was small. The people at UM know the people at Broward Health, know the people at Holy Cross, that know the people at this other hospital. So they all talk. And that's how you build, especially word of mouth. I mean, for what we've done, very little advertising, very little marketing, very little, you know, presence online. We don't advertise at all. And so that word of mouth requires a little bit more patience, requires a little bit more focus on the efficiency of your business, the showing up on time, the always being professional, the speed, the urgency. Those are things that people look for. And so we just went vertical to vertical. Class A office was immediately following healthcare. So I got into a group organization called BOMA, Building Owners and Managers Association, started networking, started meeting people. And that at that point is when I started to build that Class A office vertical. So again, every vertical is going to drive more opportunity. So now that I have my 3 or 4 trucks running in the healthcare business, now I've added 1 or 2 more for the Class A office. And that was really where we started to blossom, because what I found out about that industry was it's a very unique industry in the sense that you have one person who's making decisions for like 60 or 70 buildings, right? So it's a small relationship, right? One person and large revenue opportunity. So I didn't have to market, I didn't have to sell to 100 people. I could sell to one person and get 400 times the revenue because of that relationship. So it's very, very different. You know, I would say smaller transaction levels, but larger revenue.
But, you know, so, you know, we kind of glossed over this, right? I mean, you said that what set you apart was being on time, being courteous, being clean, doing a professional job. How do you instill that in your team now, right? Because that's still a core value of yours, but now you've got 20 plumbers running around that aren't you anymore, right?
Yeah. So that's where I will say the mission, vision, core values are critical. I didn't do a great job of it, you know, throughout my career, because as a plumber and not as a business person, you don't understand things like what's a mission, what's a vision. Essentially though, you do have your core values. You have the things that you don't allow flexibility on, right? You don't allow flexibility on things like leaving tools on someone's countertop or leaving tools on someone's tile floor. And really what we did is we implemented something called Workplace, which is a internal communication platform where people, I made our folks post pictures of every job they did, right? Before, after, in the middle. And what I was able to do was if I saw something that didn't look right, hey, you put your sewer machine on a tile floor, but you didn't put a rat, you know, you didn't put a towel underneath, you're going to scratch that person's floor. And I wouldn't say it's micromanagement, but you're setting the bar, right? You're always setting the bar. You're saying it doesn't matter how good of a plumber you are. It doesn't matter how good of a carpenter or an electrician you are. It's the little details, right? What does the average person not want to deal with after they have a trade person in their house? They don't want to clean up. So if you're the only
I've had trade people come to my house or our office and they say, can I borrow a broom? Like this is what you do. Like, how do you not have a broom or a vacuum?
Yeah. And just like any industry, look at the difference between a 4-star restaurant and a Michelin star restaurant, right? What is the difference? Everything is the difference, right? It's the way things are presented. It's the way people communicate. It's the way the people are dressed. It's the way the menu looks. It's the food that they buy. It's,
you know, my wife thinks I'm crazy, but you know, we like going to Houston's, and what's amazing is that I've never gotten a pen at when I have to sign the check at Houston's other than a black pen, no markings on it at all. But I go to any other restaurant, 4-star restaurants, and they hand me like a pen from, you know, some gas station. And I agree with you. It's down to that level of detail that makes a difference.
That comes with training. And listen, people cannot underestimate time. We have to give things time. Right. What the average is, like, you have to tell someone something 7 times before they understand it and do it every day. So when you have a scaled business, you have to keep repeating the same thing. You have to have meetings. You have to have one-on-ones. You have to have ride-alongs. You have to have all these things. And listen, it's never going to be perfect. But to me, those little 3 or 4 things, right, always being professional. We have a saying at Green Team, relentless communication, right? Always over-communicate, never under-communicate. Call, text, email, like let the customers know you're coming every single time. It doesn't matter if they get annoyed. Tell them you're coming. So the things like that, those little professional things that set you apart from people, anybody can learn how to fix pipes. Anybody can learn how to fix electric. I'm not downplaying those trades, but the reality is you're competing against a bunch of people that are trades-based people that maybe have a business background, maybe don't, but what sets you apart is thinking like the consumer, right? We have to think like the person purchasing our product. And for us, we always charge the premium, right? We're not the cheapest. We're usually the most expensive. But what we deliver for that cost is just a way different total experience. Look at an Apple retail store versus a Verizon store, right? The difference is immense, right? There's 100 employees in there, all with iPads, ready to serve you at a moment's notice. You can buy a phone in 30 seconds. Right? As to where you go to a different store, it's not the same experience. You know, Apple changed the computer business. They didn't invent the computer. They just made everything better in the computer business. So that's what we're doing. It's just, we're making the experience better. We're making the service better. And essentially, you know, with very little advertising, scaling our business across the state, eventually across the country. And I'm no different than anybody else in this business. I just happen to use some of the resources that I have. And a lot of it is when you grow up with nothing and you're used to having to get everything, you know, as a business owner, now it's like, now we have Google, we have resources, we have all these things, we have AI. Like, I mean, there's no excuse now to not be able to build a business anymore because all the resources are out there. Entrepreneur.com, Forbes.com, you can get business plan templates. You can get all these things. These resources are out there and available for people.
So I know your wife is in the business with you. My wife is in the business with me. What's that like? I mean, it's absolutely. For me, it's like, it's, you know, the office is, we try not to, but it's like 24/7, right? Because, because it's what we both do.
So I struggled with that, you know, in the first, probably I would say 5 years, you know, and we went fast. I mean, we got married and had kids quickly. So by the time our business was at, you know, 20, 25 people, we had newborns. So we had to scale that. But I would say the biggest takeaway that I can give people is you have to set boundaries. And not only do you have to set boundaries, you have to remind each other of what those boundaries are, because those boundaries might change, right? They can change over time. Your business evolves. It's hard to not want to take on the burden and the responsibility of every aspect of your business. But in our case, my wife manages the accounting side of the business, the finance side of the business. I manage operations. Now, do I need to know finance? Yes, I do. But what I figured out was that if I take on her problems and now they're mine, now I have to manage all the problems, right? And so what happens sometimes is like, she will want to get involved in operations or get involved in something. And I'm like, hey, remember the boundary we created, right? You need to worry about what you worry about. Let me worry about it. I worry about it. And listen, at the end of the day, if you go home and have a glass of wine, you want to talk about the drama from the day or the problems in your business, there's nothing wrong with that. But on a day-to-day basis, you have to create that boundary of your people, who they answer to, who your responsibilities are, and essentially just you have to create that two-lane highway. I'm going to stay in this lane. You're going to stay in that lane. And that's how it's going to be unless we change it over time. It is definitely stressful. I will say that if you're going to be in a growing business with your spouse, you must have help at home. You have to have someone helping with the stuff, because what's going to happen is there's going to be a power struggle over, okay, well, I'm working on the end of month reconcile for the bank account. All right, well, I have a major pitch I'm doing tomorrow, so I have to prepare. Okay, so we're just going to let the three kids run around the house and, you know, destroy everything and you know, burn it down when they try to make a grilled cheese? No. You have to have redundancy. And that, to me, has been the biggest thing that we've done is put the right people in place, not just in your business, but in your home life, so that you can have that balance, so that you can have date nights. You know, you cannot let your spouse become just a business partner. They have to stay your spouse first, right? That the marriage comes first, the business comes second. And that's just the way it has to be.
What are some of the struggles that you've had with employees, operations? Because I know you're kind of in this phase of your business where you're kind of, you know, you had this hockey stick growth that you're trying to keep going. So it's got to be challenging dealing with that growth. I know you've kind of brought on help to help with that. What's it like letting go, right? Because I have a hard time with that, right? The idea of, you know, I've got someone else, I'm delegating to them, and they're kind of managing things that I used to manage, and they do it a little differently than I do.
Yeah. Again, I think controlling expectations is everything, right? No one is going to think like you. No one is going to act like you. No one's going to make the same decisions as you.
Yeah. And by the way, and no one cares like you, because, you know, for me, my name's on the door. For you, this is like your baby. It's like one of your kids. You started it from nothing. You know, no one has that same passion that you do as the business owner.
Correct. Right? And what's important, and Gary Vee says this all the time, you have to stop thinking that other people are going to think like an owner, right? No one's going to think like an owner. Now, I will say it's important to find intrapreneurs, right? You want to find people that think like an entrepreneur, but don't want the risk, that want to be involved in the business, that want the upsides of their mindset. But you cannot allow micromanagement and wanting everything to be perfect. It's no different than a kid, right? When your kid turns, even a five-year-old, right? Like my son plays t-ball. These parents are like yelling at their kids on the field what to do. Like your kids, your employees are going to make mistakes. They're going to do things that you don't agree with. They're going to have conversations that you don't agree with. They're going to send emails that you don't agree with. But at the end of the day, your job is to replace yourself over and over and over and over again. I've in the last 18 months, I've replaced myself as a director of sales. I've replaced myself as a COO. I've replaced myself as a chief estimator. I've taken those three core roles in my business that I was responsible for, and I've delegated them to people that are, in my opinion, more capable than me, right? They're smarter than me in those areas, because you can't be good at everything. And self-reflection and being honest and direct with yourself of what you are and aren't good at, like if you're not good at estimating, you probably shouldn't be the chief estimator of your organization, right? If you're not good at operations or you don't have patience, you probably shouldn't be in operations, right? But if you're good with clients and you're good with vision and you're good with culture and you're good with growth and figuring out these high level problems, you know, that's where I belong. You have to figure out where you belong, because at the end of the day, happiness is way more important than making money, right? No one cares about how much money is in your bank account when you're unhappy. The other thing too is, like, everyone always comes up to me, "Oh man, congratulations. You guys are killing it. You're crushing it. The growth." And you know, what people don't realize is, like, yeah, I just signed up for working capital at the bank, and they put my house and my duplex and my life insurance policies on there too. So guess who's really all in, right? Like, it's me. So I think there's a big misconception in the world that, like, entrepreneurs and business people are, like, these amazingly successful people. Like, no, we're just the idiots that keep doing it over and over and over again, and they keep putting the money in and keep putting the time in. And again, I say that loosely, but, you know, you have to be a little crazy to do this. You have to be, you know, overly risk averse. You have to be, you know, overly abundant in your mindset of always thinking about the future, because the problem, once you get to that, like, 10 million and over, the next step is 30. The next step is 100. Now it's, you know, we have 60 employees. It'll be 100 soon. You know, the long game is so important. And the problem a lot of people have is that they're always thinking of the short-term benefits of their investments. When once you get past 50 people, like, everything takes longer, always. Like, oh, I hired somebody, I think they're going to put out my fires for me. It's going to take 6 months for them to onboard, right? That's the reality. So patience is key. And you know, I mean, there's a ton we can go into, but obviously.
Well, we're almost out of time. Yeah. So I want to end with what I think is something that you do that I don't see a lot of folks do. And those are your LinkedIn posts. In the show notes, I'm going to put a link to your LinkedIn page. They kind of catch me off guard when I run into them on LinkedIn. You know, it's not your run of the mill, "Look at this award I won," or, you know, "Thank you for, you know, nominating me for X." You kind of really get into some of the same things we're talking about here, real nitty gritty stuff. You know, what's it like to do that?
So I think one of the things that I've been blessed with is a mind that can process words a little bit more logically than others. But I also think that I don't care what people think about me, right? I don't care about people's perception. My goal when I post on LinkedIn is just to be my authentic self, right? And I think the problem with social media and all these things is that people are trying to be like the other popular people, when what they really should be doing is just being their self.
Well, you're very vulnerable in your posts. I mean, you talk about things that, you know, most people wouldn't talk about, yeah, let alone on social media.
Yeah. You know, I had someone who told me one day, like, "Why are you trying to be this, like, person?" LinkedIn is a very, like, white collar, high level executive style place where blue collar people, I think, are still trying to find their way inside of LinkedIn. But the reality is that LinkedIn is a place where if I send a DM to the owner of a $100 million a year excavation company, I get an answer in 5 minutes. If I send the DM to an executive at Pepsi, I get a DM back. Like, I'm interacting with the CEO of City Furniture and all these people that are just high level that you would never be able to talk to in a normal world. So people appreciate authenticity is number one. I'm going to deliver my own self to LinkedIn and let people make their assumptions about what I do. But the reality is, like, I love telling a story about the things that we do. And ultimately, I'm a trade guy. I like being in the ditch. I was in the ditch. I did the work. You know, I know about equipment. I understand how plumbing works. So I think just being authentic, taking time to write. You know, LinkedIn is it's not Instagram, it's not Facebook, it's not Snapchat, right? You can't just post a photo and be like, "Hey, look at me." LinkedIn is a place where copy, actual written word, that is where the algorithm comes from. So to understand the benefits of LinkedIn, you have to take time. You can't go sit on the toilet and write a post real quick. Like, no, you need to actually think about what you're going to write. Think about, again, this goes back to business though. I think like the consumer, right? If you think like the people that are looking at you, you will talk differently. You'll act differently. You'll say things differently. And, you know, I also think that most people are doing it for sales, right? I'm not doing it for sales. I'm doing it because I want to do it, right? I have zero expectation of the return on my investment on LinkedIn. And if people, you know, decide that they want to do business with me because of what I say or what I do on there, great. But I got a $20,000 lead the other day from LinkedIn, and it was just somebody who saw what I was saying. So like it does work. But you have to be authentic. You can't pretend, and, you know, just be real with yourself. And if you have the time, start posting on LinkedIn, because it is a great place to meet people. It's a great place to network, and peer-to-peer networking, I will tell you right now, has been the biggest, I would say the best investment I've ever made, is just taking the time to learn how to talk to people.
Yeah. We should all teach our kids a little more of that, right?
Well, we can if they're holding the device in their hand the whole time.
That's true. Yeah, we had, I'm fortunate that my youngest is now in college. So, you know, we kind of missed a good part of that. It's definitely harder now than it used to be, for sure.
Absolutely. It is difficult, but it's like anything. Times change, patterns change, and it's our job. You know, my kids are 11, 9, and 5, right? So I have like a long...
That's right. You got a long... That's right. You're just on the front end.
Yeah, but I will tell you right now, I see kids on the baseball field 5 years old. You can see the ones that have discipline at home, and you can see the ones that can't almost immediately. So, you know, it's kind of like parenting and business I see as very similar things, because...
Correct.
Parenting feels like all you do is discipline your child. Business feels like all you do is discipline your people, mm-hmm. right? But there's those little moments, right? It's like 80-20. I tell people it's pain before pleasure, right? You have to go through the hard in order to get the fun times. And, you know, just be prepared for that if that's the route that you want to go.
I really appreciate you taking the time, James, to talk to us a little bit about how you have embraced the suck. And it sounds like... looks like the sky's the limits for you. So if other folks wanted to get a hold of you, in addition to me giving your profile on LinkedIn, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you if they have questions?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say either Facebook or LinkedIn. Send me a DM on LinkedIn. I mean, you can put my cell phone. I don't hide from things. So you can put my cell phone number up there. Send me a text. To me, I will always help people because I got that help, right? So I'm not afraid to help people. I also think it's important to understand that when you're teaching, you're also learning, right? The student becomes the teacher, and it goes both ways, right? When you teach, you become the student as well. So I don't mind helping people at all, as long as the advice is taken and used.
I really appreciate it. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time on the Lean Zone podcast.